probably none of you have ever had this issue. Every once in a while, I lose track of something. It's usually the keys to the truck. Because I don't drive the truck very often. And so I use it to pull the boat or whatever. And every once in a while, somebody, other than myself, will want to go somewhere, and she'll say, "Why don't we take the truck? You never drive it. Poor thing just sits out there in the weather." And I'll say, "Great, let's take the truck." So I go looking for the keys to the truck. And sometimes I have a hard time finding them, because whoever drove it last misplaced the keys. And there got to be a pattern of this. And so someone said, "I'm going to get a basket. I'm going to put the basket right here. And every time you come in from driving the truck, you put the keys in the basket. Got it? Got it." Until it's time to take the truck. And someone's getting ready to go. They said, "Let's take the truck." I said, "Okay. Let me go get the keys." So I go to the basket. And there's no keys in the basket. And right away, men, don't your hearts just start to go, "Oh, where are the keys? Keys. Oh, they're in the office on my desk." And so I go into the office on my desk, and there's nothing on my desk but all these papers. And you start feeling the papers, and there's no keys on the desk. Oh, golly, Moses, where's the keys? Oh, they're out in that little thing out in the kitchen where we keep all the junk. So I go out in that little box, and I look through that little box. Please, keys, please be. You almost ready? Almost. And looking for the keys. No keys in that box. And someone's in the bathroom. "I'm combing my hair for the last time. I'm ready to go." And they're, "Oh, no, where are the keys?" And your heart is pounding. "Oh, I got to find the keys. Ah, I know where they are. They're right where they're supposed to be. They're in the boat." So I go out to the garage, to the front of the boat. And there in the front of the boat are my keys. So I pick them up. "Yeah, I'm ready to go. Got the keys. Let's go." Now, in that moment of recognition that the keys were not in the basket, but they were in the boat, that pounding in your chest, where are they, goes away. It's like, I have found the keys. They were lost, but now they are found. Oh, praise God, the keys have been found. Now, the timing doesn't always work out quite that nice. Sometimes there's two of us looking for the keys, and, we won't even go there. So, but sometimes we find them, sometimes we don't, sometimes we drive something else, whatever. There's that awful, gut-wrenching feeling about losing something and not knowing where it's at. Not knowing where it's at. You thought you knew, but you don't know where it's at. And Luke 15 is all about finding stuff that's been lost. So we read 11 to 32. 1 to 10, he tells two parables, and you know these parables about the guy with the lost sheep. Jesus says, if a shepherd has 100 sheep and one gets lost, does he not leave the 99 and go off hunting for the one? Well, of course he does. Why? Because that one's lost. He can't find it. It's not in the basket. He doesn't know where it's at. So he's going to go all over the place trying to find it so he can bring it back where? To the 100 and make the 100 whole and complete. And then he says it's like a woman who has 10 coins, and one of the coins gets lost in her house. Does she not leave the 9 to go search frantically for the other one? Yes, of course she does. Why? Because she's got to have it. She checked the basket. It's not in the basket. She doesn't know where it's at. Oh, wait a minute. Here it is. It's under the couch. How'd it get under the couch? Probably the same way the keys got in the boat. But anyway, she found it. So the shepherd is panicky. And he sighs with a huge relief when he finds the sheep. The woman is panicky, but she sighs with a huge relief when she finds the coin. And in our story, it reads as if one son is missing. And the father would give anything to have him back. But it's different because in our story, he can't just go find the lost son. The lost son must decide to come back to the father. The lost son has to decide he's lost and he wants to come back. And that's a huge difference. So today, we want to focus on the man. There was a man. And this man had two sons. Two sons. And we want to focus on the man. Well, look at the story from his perspective as much as possible. As much as possible. So here we go. He had a younger son. And one day the younger son came to him and said, "Hey, Dad, been thinking, yeah? Yeah, you know, I'd like you to give me my inheritance, and I'm going to just go ahead and take off for a while. Where are you going to go?" "I don't know, you know, I don't know. I haven't thought that through yet. But I just want you to give me half my stuff, and I'm going to take off." And so the father, because the father believed in free will, said to the son, "Okay." And so he divided everything in half. And he gave it to his son, what was his. A few days later, the son gathered all the stuff. He sold what he had to sell to turn it into, he had to liquidate it. He had land and cattle and sheep and things he had to liquidate, turn it into gold or whatever. And so he took a few days. And then he took off. He collected everything he had to collect. He sold what he could sell and he took off. And he went far, 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 far away. And we say, well, how do you know how far he went? He went so far that he was no longer, when he hits rock bottom and he starts to feed the pigs, he's now in a territory that's filled with Gentiles. So he's left all the nearby Jewish communities. He's gone farther than that. He's gone way farther than that. So he goes to a way, 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 way away from the father. He squandered everything he had liquidated on a fast and wild, wonderful life until the money ran out. Not only did the money run out, there was a huge famine in the land. And now he's in serious stuff. Serious. And so he gets a job feeding pigs. So this good Jewish boy is feeding pigs. He's lost. The father also has an older son. And the older son is always in the fields. This boy works and works and works and works and works. Ever since he was old enough to stand up and do something meaningful in terms of work, that boy's been at it. And the father praised him when he was working, but the boy took it to extremes. And now he's always in the fields. Every day he's in the field. He's working, working, working. He's in the field before the sun comes up. He's in the fields once the sun comes down. He's hanging out with the servants and the slaves out in the field. The boy just works, works, works constantly. Never stops. 7 days a week, that boy's working in the field, working in the field, working. I got to get my work done. I got to do this. I got to earn a living. I got to do good for my family. All that stuff. Never disobeyed a command. The dad would get a hold of him and say, "Hey, listen, I need you to, oh, got it. Can you take care of it?" "Sure can. Would you move these over?" "Yeah, got it." Followed all the rules, followed all the laws. Work, 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 work. What a good boy. Good son. Almost. Because in all the work, the father realized that this boy was really distant from him. Really distant. It was almost as if this boy thought that the father didn't even care about him or loved him. Because they had just grown so distant. Because the kid's always in the field, working constantly. And so both of these boys grieve the father greatly. They just break his heart. The youngest one, because he has publicly insulted his father. No Jewish boy goes to the father, asks for the inheritance, and then gets it and sells it and wastes it. The father's ridiculed. He's mocked. His friends make fun of him out on the golf course. They go fishing together out on the boats and where the keys are. And when he can find the keys, he takes the boat out. And then his friends are making fun of him because, you stupid fool, what'd you give all that stuff to that kid for? You knew what he was going to do. On and on. And he just wears this burden all the time. Because the youngest son believed that if you want to find the fullness of life, you know what you got to do? You got to just go out and find it. All the zesto you can find, just go out and find life. It's out there. Goodness and wonderment is out there somewhere. The fulfillment of life is out there. You have to just go get it. And so he went. And the father thought, I may never see him again. There's no calls, letters, text, emails, twits. There's nothing. I never hear from the boy. And I'll probably never hear from him again. He's just lost. The oldest one. The father knew the oldest one was never really with him either. You know, you can tell. You can tell. And he knew that the oldest one was never really connected with him. And he never let his heart know the love of the father. All the times that the father tried to love the son and love him and do things with him and go work with him or share things with him, he just felt like the son was always rejecting him because he wanted to go out and work. Gotta go work, Dad. Gotta go work, Dad. And so it always felt like he was rejected because this son thought the fullness of life comes by working hard, being good, follow the rules, follow the law. And you'll be happy and content and find the fullness of life if you just work hard. The father was afraid he'd never see him again. Oh, he'd be out in the field. But he was afraid he would never connect with him. Because the stinking kid was always working. He didn't really care much about his dad. And his dad knew it. But one day something happened. That young one ran out of money. Praise God. He ran out of money. Ran out of luck. Ran out of friends. When you run out of money, you run out of friends. And luck, usually. And one day he woke up and he said, you know, these pigs stink. I'm not allowed to eat them. They'd be good on the barbecue grill, but not allowed to go there. So he thought to himself, you know, darn, even all those slaves my father has at home, at least they're in some kind of a shelter. When it's cold and rainy, they're covered, they're protected, they have bread enough to spare. I'm going home, and I'm just going to ask my dad, can I just like be, not your son, but one of the servants. So he said, I'm going to tell him that I've sinned against heaven, I've sinned against you, I'm not worthy to be your boy anymore, and I understand, I realize that, I screwed up big time, I got it, I know it, I got it. I just want to live with the servants. That's all I want to do, live with the servants. Don't want to bother you, you don't have to talk to me, just let me live on the property with the slaves. And so he headed home. Every day, the father would go down the driveway to the mailbox, and he'd look down the road every day. And he'd do it 4, 5, 10, 12, 15 times a day. Every day, he'd go down the road to the mailbox and he'd look for the boy. Every day, weeks, months, and months, and months, and months, but every day, no day could ever go by that that father did not go out and look for the boy. Is he coming home today? Down the road from them, the little pathway kind of goes up a little bit, like has a little crest to it. And he would just wait to see if the boy came over the crest or not. Every day, he'd go look. Every day. One day, one day. He went out to the mailbox and he looked and he couldn't believe his eyes. There was this figure on just coming over the crest of the hill. He could just see the top of his head and then the body and then the legs and then the feet. And we stand at the crest of the hill and he started to come down the hill and he knew it was his boy. He knew it was the boy. He knew it was his son was coming home. He knew his boy was coming home. And he was so overwhelmed and so filled with compassion that he just, boom, he just took off and he ran and he ran and he ran and he ran. He ran to get the boy, to hold him. Feeling. He wanted to hold his son's body next to his own and feel his heartbeat and just hold him. And so he ran to him and he grabbed him and he kissed him and he hugged him and he kissed him and he hugged him. And all the neighbors are looking out the window. What's going on with Bubba across the street? Why is he holding that boy like that? Why is he kissing that boy? That's his boy. That's his son. He wouldn't let the boy apologize. He didn't want to hear any of that. He was just so glad to have him come home. He didn't hear a bunch of junk about where he's been. I don't care. I just want you home. I just want him to come home. He disregarded all the laws, all the cultural norms by racing and getting the boy. That just wasn't important to him. The father wanted his son. And in this moment, the son wanted the father. It all come together. He said to his wife, bring the best robe you can find. Bring the best robe you can find. And when he put the robe over him, it covered the filth and the smell and the nastiness of the sun. It covered him up and erased all these signs of his past sinfulness. The new robe made a statement of beauty and newness about the sun. He said, bring me a ring. Quick, bring me the ring. Bring me a ring. He put the ring on the boy's finger. And the ring was the sign that all that belongs to the Father belongs to the Son with the ring. All that I have is yours. It said, you belong to me. And all that I have is yours because you have the ring. He said, bring me sandals and put them upon his feet. Because only the servants and the slaves would go barefoot. Anybody who lived in the home, anyone who was with the father, wore shoes, sandals. And so he put the sandals on the boy's feet to say, he belongs to me. He lives with me in my house. This is my son. And they killed the fatted calf. And they sat and they ate and they laughed and they ate and they cried and they laughed and they cried and they laughed and they cried and they ate. And they ate, and they ate. And they built their relationship back together. They built their relationship back together. Because the son had come to the father. But he also has the older son. He came back too. He saw the lights on in the house. He could hear the music and seeing the shadows of the people dancing inside. He heard all of that. And so he comes back and he asks the slave, hey, what's going on in the house, man? What's the old man doing? What's going on inside there? And the slave said, oh, you haven't heard? Oh, my, this is cool. So wonderful. Your brother has come home. Oh, man. And your dad is celebrating, gave him the robe, the ring, the sandals, and the fatted calf. Oh, it's so wonderful. Yada, yada, all that stuff. And he became angry. He became enraged with hatred. All those feelings that he generated out in that field towards his father came to life. And he spewed them all over his father. He said, listen, listen. When you read that word, listen, that's not like two people meeting in a library trying to be nice. Listen. No. That listen is a word of rage. Listen! And it spews all over his father the anger and the bitterness of all those years of misinterpreting his love with the father. The father was grieved, so grieved, that this son could not come home. So he says to him, listen, I love you. I'm always with you. You're always with me. All that I have is waiting for you. It's yours. It's yours. And that's where the parable stops. Because Jesus wanted the Pharisees to know that they were the older son. And they would have to decide if they would come to the Father or not. And he wanted the Pharisees and the rest of the people to know that they were all the prodigals. And they could come to him. They could come to him. But those with the hard hearts had to decide if they wanted to come or still be angry and continue to work in the fields. The Father is the presence of God. So it is God who gives free will to both those boys. It is God who says to the one, if you think working is the best thing for you to do, there's the field. Have at it, Bubba. And he says to the youngest one, if you think running away is the best thing for you to do, here's what I can give you now. You go at it, because he gives to them both free will. It was God who went seeking after both sons, because as soon as he would come back into the house from not seeing anything at the mailbox on the driveway and no son, he would go straight to the back porch and look out the back porch into the fields and look for the oldest son. Is he coming home? Is he coming home? He's not, but is he coming home? He would search for both sons to come home every day, all day. Search for both of them to come home. It was God who broke the norms of society and desperately ran down the street to embrace and to love and to kiss and to hold the one who had decided to come to the Father. It was God who threw the celebration. It was God who said, we must rejoice, for something wonderful has happened. But what about the sons? The sons are us. The sons are us. The sons are humanity on its quest for fulfillment and wholeness in life. Some of humanity thinks, oh, it's always greener on the other side. I just got to go find it. And the rest of humanity says, no, you just need to stay here and work hard. Work hard. Just work hard, and you'll be happy. Neither one turned to God. Neither one turned to God. Until it got so bad for the youngest that his heart broke, and he turned back to the Father. And when he turned to the Father, he brought back his heart. And his Father said to him, this son of mine, you are my son. You are my son. This son of mine who is dead has found life. This son of mine who is lost has been found. He has given me his heart. He's given me his heart. And the party started like no party those folks on that street had ever seen before. There were people looking out the windows, looking out the shades, trying to figure out what's going on because the band was rocking. There was music and food, fatted calves being slaughtered and cooked on the barbie. There was cold beer everywhere. I mean, it was a huge party, a big festival. Maybe it was cold wine. I don't know. But anyways, a huge festival going on. And there was lots of eating and celebrating. There was lots of music and dancing and hanging out. And everything was going on. But we'd be so wrong to think for a moment that the party was for the son. The party was not for the son. It was about the son. It wasn't for the son who came home. It was about the fact that the son came home and brought his heart to his father. And brought his heart to his father. Whenever someone gives their heart to the Father, there's a huge celebration in the kingdom of heaven, because that's all about us. That's all about us.
So when you accepted Christ as your Lord and Savior, when you accept Him as your Lord and Savior, there was this huge, huge, huge celebration in the kingdom of heaven. People are hooting and hollering and dancing. And the angels are dancing around, having a great time, all this stuff going on. And all through the kingdom of heaven is your name, Tipton Blair Younger. And it was hooting and hollering, woo-hoo, and all that kind of stuff. Because Tipton Blair Younger had what? Come home. Offered his heart. And the father raced to a prayer rail in Leesburg to embrace me. Because I'd come home. No matter how you've come home, the same things happen for you. Even for the choir. Even for the choir. The same thing has happened. But here's the problem. We're in the Lenten season. And a lot of folks have been going to church for a long time. And so we easily get confused. They say, well, as long as I go to church, I'm okay. As long as I put a little something in the golden bowls, I'm okay. Because we equate that to working. As long as I work, I'm okay. I'm okay if I work. I come to church every Sunday. I'll work at coming to church and listen to Him every Sunday. I'll put a little something in the golden bowls every Sunday. I'll work. But that doesn't cut it. Doesn't want your work. Wants your heart. He wants your heart. If the boy in the fields had just come in and said, Father, I want to give you my heart. It'd have been this huge celebration. For him, not for him. But about Him. About Him. Some of us are still prodigals. We're still looking for that stuff out there somewhere. Make me feel fulfilled. Woohoo! But it's not out there. It's in here. And some of us just work so hard at whatever, we think that's the ticket. As long as I keep going to church on Sunday mornings and getting a little, I'm in. I wouldn't put all my money on that. Because it ain't about that. It's about our hearts. It's about your heart. So the only thing I want to leave you with, to whom does your heart belong? I can't answer that. Only you can answer that. To whom does your heart belong?